and welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I am your host, Adam Elmacayas, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California, for episode number 70 with Emo Night. And Emo Night is created by two people. We've got Morgan and TJ on the line today. Now, Morgan and TJ created Emo Night, and there's kind of a cool story to it, but what impresses me about them is their ability to work together. One of them's creative, the other one's a little more, you know, business, but they're both things as well. Like, they specialize in each one, but they also complement each other, and I thought that was a really interesting dynamic. They really created this event with their own, you know, with their own two hands over the past, seven years? I forget the exact numbers, but it's been a while. They've been working at this hard, and it's amazing. If you're anywhere in the U.S., they throw parties all over, and it's nice because I feel like they picked up where Warped Tour left off, and it's nice. And like I said, I feel like they picked up where Warped Tour left off, and this is the kind of music I grew up listening to. I really love the lyrics. I like this kind of, you know, this is my home. So to have them on the podcast was really nice to get to talk to them, ask them questions about how they created it. I have worked with them in the past. I'm hoping to work with them in the future. Actually, kind of cool story. I think the cool thing about Emo Night is if you're trying to work in the music industry, they have a lot of jobs available intermittently. They might not right now, don't quote me on it. And the jobs give you experience on what it might be like to tour, whether you're doing photography for them for a night or helping them run a local team. If you can, try to work for Emo Night. I don't know if they're accepting job applications right now, but when they do, jump on it because they are a great team. All right, Connor. Connor's joining us. Say hi, Connor.
Hi, Connor.
Yes, perfect. Okay, cool. If you don't know Connor yet, he is the producer of the show. He is on every call. He edits every episode, writes everything that you see in the caption. He's a very hard worker. So if you ever run into him in real life, make sure you thank him. He does a great job. But Connor, you got to work for Emo Night. How was it?
It was awesome. I got to work with them not that long ago, and it was such a blast. The team was awesome. Now they just know how to throw on a good party.
How did you get connected with them?
It was through networking and knew a buddy who was working for Emo Night, and I knew they need someone to fill in for a night, and, you know, sent them over my portfolio. They dug it and, you know, came out the next night and shot for them. It was amazing.
And what do you think? You know, I know that you haven't toured yet. We'll get there eventually, but you do shoot music, live venues. And what has it been like kind of transitioning from working for probably not getting that much money, if any at all, kind of building your portfolio to now getting hired and getting paid? Like, how cool is it to send Emo Night your portfolio? And they're like, all right, we're giving you money.
Dude, it's so weird. Like, so many years of just not being paid and be like, this is a fun show. You get in for free and like, that's fun. Then they're like, hey, do that and you get paid. It's like, wait, what? Am I getting punked? This is awesome. How would I not like that?
Yeah, that's great. Well, congrats to you for doing it. Connor, you've been out in LA for how long now?
Was it 8-9 months now? Something like that.
How many, I mean, would you recommend it? Like, if people want to work in the industry, I know, like, what has your experience been like now that you've been in LA working rather than Denver or Michigan?
Compared to any of those places, the amount of work I've gotten here is like exponentially much more. Like, I understand how you can be somewhere else and be working and kind of being that person in town who's like, I'm the music photographer or such and shuts, but like being out here where you can take a job the day of, or they're like, hey, can you quickly help us out with this? I don't know anywhere else you can do that like LA.
Yeah, there's a lot of people working here.
Yeah, a lot.
All right, Connor, do you want to do the Patreon with me?
Yes, I would love to.
All right, cool. Throwback. We do miss you, Neil. I'm not, I think it's been how many episodes since Neil's been on here? Like 35?
Yeah.
Maybe more?
Maybe
a
more.
Long time.
Too long.
All right, we've got two new patrons. And if you don't know what Patreon is, it's how you can sign up, support the podcast. If you want to get jobs in the music industry, people are posting on a job op section in there. And if you ever need a recommendation, I just kind of look through people's chat history and make sure, you know, I assume you know a lot because you're part of our Discord, but it's just a good way to kind of hopefully get yourself involved with the community and hopefully get you hired. Anyway, new this week, we always welcome people their first week. We've got Logan and
Isaiah.
Good job, Connor.
Thank you.
We did the thing.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, patrons, for employing Connor, keeping this ad-free, making it possible to do. I do mean that. I literally could not do this without your... It's not that much. A few bucks, and I really appreciate it. It goes a long, long way. None of that ends up in my pocket. I will tell you that much. It all goes towards making this show happen. So we really appreciate it.
And with that being said, Please enjoy this episode of Don't Shit on the Bus.
Welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. Thank you for joining me, guys. I'm happy to have you here.
Yeah,
thank you for asking us to do this. Like we said, we were just talking about, we're usually on the other side of this. So this is fun.
Yeah, this is cool. I enjoyed I mean, I know you guys. I've talked to you guys. I've hung out with you before. I enjoyed researching you guys to see what we had in common. TJ, we are about the same age. Morgan, I couldn't find your age because when you Google Morgan Freed age, it's Morgan Freeman.
He erased his age from the internet. Doesn't want anybody to know.
That's perfect. Really? That's great. No, I don't know how to do that. But it does pull up. Like I've never Googled myself before. And then I did like a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh, this is great. It really just goes to Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Like, so anything, it just gets buried by Morgan Freeman.
Well, we might have to cut off a limb and count your rings or something.
Some say that's why they named Disney's Frozen, because they wanted to bury Walt Disney being Frozen search results on Google. Because if you type in Disney Frozen, you're not going to find out anything about Walt Disney freezing himself. You're only going to see the movie.
Wow.
Is he supposedly frozen?
Yeah.
Cryogenic, right? Yeah. That's like an old school rumor. That's like before the internet rumor.
Yeah.
That's like Marilyn Manson sucking his dick rumor. His own dick rumor.
Like he's like, you remember ribs those? Or something? Yeah,
missing ribs. Yeah, removing a rib. I remember when people said that he was the dude from Wonder Years also. Like what a genius thing to like, that's when like rumors were actually rumors.
Yeah.
And you just heard it through the grapevine.
What were the other ones?
Jamie Lee Curtis was a hermaphrodite.
What's the dude that like belched, put a gerbil in his head? Richard Gere put gerbils in his ass?
That was on Curb Your Enthusiasm that got so big. And I didn't realize that till I watched Curb and my girlfriend's dad explained it to me.
Those were before the internet. Those were like pre-internet. So it's like you had to hear that from a friend group, like sitting around in a circle. And like kids now will never ever know like how rumors like that got started and how they got circulated. Like that was those were special ones. I think Marilyn Manson that got getting his ribs removed to suck his own dick is maybe one of the best examples of that.
Yeah, I think that's there's rumors that are like about facts, and then there's rumors like, well, there's just things that happen, right? Like drawing the S, the jokes people would tell, like, you know, all those, yeah, like punching people and doing that sign, right? It's mm-hmm. like all those things. Yeah, they're like pre-internet fads. It's wild how fast they...
The original meme.
Yeah, OG meme. Okay. I mean, we can all acknowledge that, you know, that's cool. Okay, Morgan, without knowing your age, I know your age now.
Oh, I'm 37. I'm 37. Oh. That's fine.
All right.
I don't care.
No, you're fine. I was just, you know, we all grew up in a similar time listening to similar music, and it's nice to kind of, I feel like I just get to relate to you guys for an hour. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Emo Night. It's really cool. And I wanted to know, going back to in your guys' lives, when did you guys start listening to this type of music? Like, what was your gateway into it? And either of you can answer first. I don't want to like call on you the whole time. Just whoever has it first.
Mine was like the summer between eighth grade and ninth grade when my eighth grade girlfriend broke up with me. And then I like discovered Dashboard Confessional. And I was like, this is awesome. And then I remember I went to Hot Topic and I bought a bunch of clothes. And I was like, I'm going back to high school and I'm going to be emo.
You created a new self.
Yeah, I created a new identity that summer, you know. When you're in high school and you have those summers off and you can come back as whoever you want, pretty tight. Miss that.
Mine came like rooted in like metal. Like I grew up like playing in like metal bands and like progressive metal bands, embarrassing stuff. I have the recording somewhere, but then I started listening to the shit that like was around that time. I was just getting influenced by my older friends. It's weird because like a wave of Bosnians came over during the war and they really liked that stuff. They really liked like 3 Mile Pilot and like Drive Like Jehu and things like that, which I've never heard before then. And I just sort of got into it because they got into it, and it was maybe like seventh grade. So long, long time ago. Like I started listening to like when it was still like harder sort of punk music, and then it got yeah. soft, you know.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, you started a little bit before TJ and I would say, and then got into, you know, got into the Dashboards, Taking Back Sundays, Brand News, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty fair estimate. But I've always liked music in general, so it was like this was just something that I related to more.
That makes sense. Was it just like, you know, the lyrics really hit you and kind of resonated with you?
I don't know. I just like wasn't. It's like, you know, when you go to high school, you're like, oh, I'm gonna do like sports or be in a band or do, you know, be in a band or do drugs or do sports. And like I was like, I can't play sports, so this is the obvious choice for me.
Between drugs and music, you found the one that called your name.
Kind of did both for a while.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah, it's like you can do drugs and music or sports. And I was like, I'm not going to do sports. So this is good for me.
I feel like through interviewing both of you for this, I'm going to learn a lot about myself because I've never heard somebody articulate high school as a decision between those three things. And that makes so much, I feel like you're changing my history.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of stuff I have to say about high school. I don't remember a lot of it, but like when people ask these questions, it helps me bring back up. But you know, there was also like a really, like, I think TJ and I grew up in like two separate communities, but I think two communities that had a very strong sense of like local artists and local bands.
It was Boston and Tucson, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I grew up in Utah, actually.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I apologize. That is my fault.
No, I went to college in Boston and my family is all from Boston. But yeah, I grew up in Utah. So we were like pretty close. We were on top of states are touching, right?
Yeah.
Similar vibe, like Southwestern kind of, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the bands that came out of like Arizona or Salt Lake, like they would do like regional tours and stuff. So they would all hit the same places. Like I remember, you know, going to see bands like The Bled, and Morgan was like playing bass for The Bled for a second.
You played for The Bled?
I mean, like a couple shows, you know what I mean? Like with all those like metal bands. Yeah, but I mean, dude, everybody played in everybody else's band, right? Gotcha. So there was like every band in Tucson played in each other's bands. There was just like nothing to do. And I think that was so special. Like what was so special about the places that we grew up is that there was just one practice spot and we'd go fucking from one band room to another band room to another band room. Everybody would start bands with each other. And okay, that's what we did. When there's nothing else to do, it's like, that's what you do.
And TJ, was that similar for you in Utah? Were you playing in music as well?
Yeah, I was playing in bands and stuff in high school and making records. And, you know, we had like, I don't know, I feel like I played in like five bands with a bunch of the same people.
Similar experience. It was very incestuous, like kind of Everything was, you know, and to make it out of the state with a different name. Or so did you guys both tour then before?
I didn't tour until I got into college. I did like one tour in college. I dropped out of school and I went on tour and it was like just a DIY, like self-booked tour. And I hated it so much. We were just in a van and, you know, you're not making like any money and sleeping on people's floors. And I felt like in high school that was like so romantic to me. And then I did it once and I was like, this is terrible. I hate this. And then now, like a few years ago, we got to go on tour with 303 and we had two buses and it was like, you know, a pretty nice tour. Like
you're living it.
Yeah. You're pretty much living the dream at that point. And I also hated that. Like, I think I'm just not cut out for tour life.
Well, I'm glad you guys found a way to work in music with maybe a more sustainable day-to-day life than being on the road. You know, it doesn't lend itself to balance. So that makes sense.
No, I mean, we figured out how to like tour it in a way that like works for our lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I really can't like, dude, fucking the don't shit on the bus rule is so hard for me because I have to poop like first thing in the morning. And, you know, sometimes you're not there yet. Sometimes you're not at that Walmart parking lot by 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. or whatever. It sucks.
And traveling throws me off all the time. Like, it always just throws off my whole fucking schedule. Like, it always throws everything off. And it's just like, people never talk about like being uncomfortable because of their own, like, but like, you know, their own bodily functions of like just having to be in a place with a lot of people all the time. And like, I don't like being dirty, even though I look super dirty. I like showering every day. And it's like, I like taking my time to do things that make me feel bad. And you're just not able to do that on a bus, but you get used to it. You do get used to it though. Like, you know, towards the end, I was like, this is tight. Like, I was like, it's like anything. It takes TJ to like form a habit, 2 weeks to form a habit. And like after 2 weeks, it's like, yeah, I got a little bit more used to the schedule.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, it's kind of cool because I know during the early days of Emanite, you guys had to tour. It was not like a bus tour. You were just kind of commuting and flying back and forth. So you were kind of touring back then as well, even before the 303 tour, just in probably a more difficult way.
Yeah. I don't know if it's more difficult. I mean, I guess it is, especially because those parties, those early ones, we were doing them on Tuesdays, but I was like 24 and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's flying and stuff to me is easier, I guess, than a bus.
No, that's fair.
I just don't like any mode of transportation whatsoever, to be honest. Like, I hate sitting in one spot all day. Like, I just looked at the clock and it was 3 and I was like, I'm not even moved. Like, I hate being confined in one area. So,
well, feel free to be as fidgety as you want during this podcast, because I move around a lot, because I agree with you. You got a standing desk yet?
I do. I have one. And then I'm getting one from Morgan. I have this company that called Autonomous that made my standing desk. They're going to give me another standing desk for a YouTube video with Morgan.
Did we just do an ad?
We're going to build it together. It's going to be fun. Like, I need a task to do for like YouTube stuff. Like, that's what I need in order to do it. But I think it'll be really a lot of fun. I'm like looking forward to doing that.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'll check out that company. And this wasn't paid for by anybody, by the way, guys. This came up naturally. This is real. This is a real ad. All right. So the music you guys listen to, eighth grade, high school, that kind of vibe. I was wondering, I feel like you work so in deep with this genre for so long. Have you guys figured out what about the music we listen to in our teens stick? What makes it stick with us for so long?
It's a big question, but I don't know. I think it was, I think, you know, I've thought about this a lot, but you know, like the 80s were like a very specific thing. The 90s were a very specific thing, sounding type of deal. And then we came to the 2000s and it was like this mix of technology, like computer, you know, like computers and knowing people from all across the country, and this strange era of music where it didn't sound like anything else that had existed before, but it was a really strange blip in time that I thought at like the time was like, oh man, this culture it's just going to go away. Like, this is just something that like, it's not going to be like the 80s. It's not going to be like the 90s. It's not going to be like anything. And now we're seeing this like giant resurgence of it. Not even, you know, like, I don't know. I think that happens to every culture and generation, but we just don't see it when we're in it. I think it was, there's a lot of things that, you know, the times that we were living in, the way that we connected with people, I think it was just a really special time for music that never sounded like this. And it was also like a real, like, our parents don't understand this stuff, but then our parents didn't understand their parents, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. They had the same thing happen to them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was just, I think that it was just our time for that.
I think that when you're a teen and you're listening to music and relating to the lyrics and stuff, it's almost like a window into like adulthood.
Yeah.
You know, when you're like 13 and you're discovering stuff and you're listening to lyrics about like a breakup or a toxic relationship or something, you may not have like experienced it, but you almost like, you have like a longing to experience it, or like, I don't know. It feels
that makes sense.
Cooler and older. And I don't know. I think maybe that's why it sticks.
And then when you do experience it, you relate to this more than anything else, right? Like, it's like, this was the first time that I think lyrically we heard people speak so honestly and, you know, a lot of the times like egotistically about relationships in this type of music. You know, it was just a different type of lyric and a different type put behind like a different type of music.
Yeah. Because like Motley Crue, they're not singing about like how some girl broke their heart and they're so fucking upset about it. You know, like all their shit is about like girls and money and like being the man. And it was like putting this sensitive edge to rock music that hadn't really been there before.
I think you put into words why I never got into those bands that theoretically my parents would listen to. My parents didn't, because my dad's an immigrant and my mom's unique. But, you know, do you think that emo music will ever be associated with a non-youthful generation? I mean, for example, kind of how we think of the Rolling Stones and the Grateful Dead now, like we don't think of them as, I mean, I know kids listen to them, but generally it's an older generation. Do you think like when we're 50, we'll still be listening to this and maybe the 20-year-olds won't be?
Yeah, I think it'll always turn into something that is reminiscent of emo. Like, I think whatever it is going to turn into what 13, 14, 15-year-old, 16-year-olds, like how they're expressing it, you know, and we can see it in things like hyper pop, and it's evolving in like a way that, you know, there still gets classified sort of as emo. And I think that that's like a big thing that TJ and I have been trying to work on, is introducing those artists and newer artists into the world and being like, dude, this is emo. And you are getting lumped into that because of the lyrical content that you guys are speaking about.
So what does that look like in practice? Like, how are you guys incorporating those newer artists, maybe from finding them to putting them on a show? Is that kind of what?
Yeah, I mean, I think this year especially, it's a big priority for us. It started out like in 2017 or 2016, when we added the second room at the Echoplex. We started adding live bands up in the Echo. We're like, oh, we have a built-in crowd that's coming here no matter what. You know, we're not announcing guest DJs, we're not announcing anything. They're coming for emo night. So let's find bands that we like, that we believe in, and put them in front of this crowd that they wouldn't normally get to play to if they just announced a show on their own at the Echo. And now we've started doing that in other places across the country. We have live band rooms at our Texas shows, at our Omaha, Nebraska show. We're adding live band rooms in Atlanta and Orlando. Now we have, you know, a bunch of markets where we have live bands that are like, you know, stuff that we like, that we think is cool. We can kind of like make our event like the hub for that local scene. And we have a whole other ecosystem now that we can plug these bands into, whether it's like our Spotify playlist or whether it's like Morgan's radio show or, you know, our social media posts. We have a whole emo night universe. And if, you know, we like something that's new and cool and up and coming, like we can kind of support it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, I like the emo. I guess I didn't realize how much emo night was an extension of yourselves. I mean, I knew it was quite personal, but I like that you're putting, you know, you said we put artists that we like in here. And it's nice that, you know, the people who are creating it are also the people you're creating it for in a way.
That was kind of the point to begin with. You know, we really wanted to make a party that we would want to go to. And we still try to do that with all of our events. We try to make them like funny and fun and just like, what would make us laugh? What would be cool if we were out there just as an attendee? Like, what would blow our minds? Whether that's like a mariachi band or that learns Blink 182 or like a country band playing My Chemical Romance or an airplane writing our logo in the sky, or like we do weird stuff all the time that doesn't make sense. Like we did like our event 2 months ago at the Avalon was under the sea.
Because why not?
Just because it was fun, like for us. Like we get, okay, cool. We get like a new aesthetic to play with. We get to make like all these cool visuals being underwater now for the whole stage. We get to make sound effects that we get to play at the DJ booth of bubbles and SpongeBob noises. And, you know, it's just like, what's going to make us laugh and keep us entertained? And I think that's what's kept us going for so long. We have never just like leaned into like being nostalgic or like go back in time and listen to the music you loved and wear your swoopy hair and your eyeliner. It's like, we've always tried to make this like the event to be at this year currently that we're looking at. This should be the coolest party you want to go to in 2022, not because you're like reliving your youth or whatever.
I wish this is what my high school dances were like.
Dude, it was like, that's the thing about it is like, you know, there's a couple of venues in Tucson and in Utah that were really reminiscent of the community that, you know, we see in LA. It's just now, it's just different. Now it's just like different. It looks different. And I think that that's kind of the feeling that we wanted, not going to a show and just watching a band and leaving. It was a going to a show, seeing all your friends, hanging out, you know, like forming relationships. Like it's a, that's what we wanted to do, but just how we would do it.
No, that's great. And I, you know, I think I like about you guys is, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you guys meet working together or were you friends before?
We met working.
We were working.
Yeah.
Okay.
I basically forced TJ into being friends with me.
Like that really interests me because a lot of the times it's the other way around. People are friends and then they work together, but you work together and then you became friends. At what point were you guys working together and you guys kind of, was there any turning point where you're like, oh, this is my guy. Like we can have a partnership and, you know, create this empire, or did it just happen?
It's funny that you said that because like, I think about it all the time and I always, like people are like, I'm going to go into business with my best friend. And TJ and I went into business without knowing each other very well. And it ended up just so happening that he is now my, you know, my best friend. It works into that. Like it works very, very well. And I think that that's why we work so well together. We didn't really know each other too well before we started to dive into this thing.
Yeah. I think we really just started the business because we needed to open a business bank account because we were already like, we were already making money from the shows. It wasn't much. Like we made like $500 the first emo night. And then I think the next month we spent it all buying everybody pizza. And like,
that's the best way to spend $500 if I've ever heard of it.
Totally. So we were just like, all right, if we're going to be like having these transactions at our events that we're doing, like we should probably start a business bank account. And if you do that, if you have a business bank account, you need to start business. So we went on LegalZoom and started an LLC and here we are.
That's awesome.
This is also not an ad for LegalZoom.
Yeah. This is not sponsored. They have to pay us to make us not say it. That's my rule.
Hold on. I'm going to pee in a peek in something. I'm coming right back. So I'm not going to go to the bathroom.
Something?
Yeah. I'm just going to like get the,
should we continue without you or?
Well, I'm just going to be there. I'll pee while we're doing it because I don't want to like miss this. So I'm just going to find something to pee.
Can you mute it at least?
That's so thoughtful of you. I think it's weird because he's trying to be thoughtful, but really like, I can mute him. It's funny because I think this is something I picked up from tour, but like I have the capability of peeing in a bottle and not being weirded out about it. And I only have one bathroom at my place. So sometimes
when
my
girl in the kettle on the Zoom,
I'm going to wash it out.
Turn the camera off at least.
Just going to wash it out. Fine.
Was this premeditated?
No, I've been drinking cranberry juice all day. Like I drank a whole bottle of cranberry juice and I didn't realize that. And I was on a call right before this. So I didn't get a chance to pee.
I'm going to do this sometime.
Can you hear it?
Just to channel you. No. Yes. While you're peeing, this leads right into my next question really well, because my next question was, are there any rules to your guys' relationship? Because you're professional and you're friends. Do you guys have like boundaries you set? Are you kind of just, everything's very fluid? Like what's your guys' relationship like?
I don't know.
Morgan while peeing, trying to answer. No, TJ, Morgan, you go.
Morgan's like really creative and really smart. We're just good at different things. Like I handle a lot more of like the logistical operations of the company. And, you know, Morgan is super good at trend forecasting. He's much more of like a visual person. He heads up like all of our creative stuff. And I think that we balance each other out really well in that sense. Like I'm good at budgeting and forecasting and handling getting people's invoices paid. Did you just drink your pee?
Yeah.
No. I didn't drink the pee.
I was like, damn, that's some clear pee.
And like, that's, you know how like TJ was just like, dude, fucking click the goddamn mute. But like, this is right in the beginning. It's just shit like that. Like there's just some stuff that TJ is so good at that I've just accepted that I'm just never going to be good at. And it's okay. Like it's an okay thing.
Yeah. Cause you got both of you. It's a partnership. You can work together.
It works really, really well. And we found a really nice dance of what we can do together to make each other better at what we do. Like
how to push each other.
Yeah. And like, you know, whenever we get in like arguments, it's like, cause it's for a reason, you know, and we always end up getting out of it because we love each other essentially.
It's like
something that's what you do with somebody. Like we're basically in a marriage. So it's like finding out how we can come to a common ground if we disagree on some stuff or if like one of us does something shitty and how we work through that. Because, you know, it's been going on 8 years and I don't know if you've known somebody for 8 years and talked to them every day for 8 years, but sometimes things aren't the best and sometimes like things go up and down and it's figuring out how to make those things work while running a company.
Do you guys have any examples that are appropriate to share of, you know, maybe things you disagreed on? And I don't know if there's anything there worth sharing, but if not, it's okay too.
I don't know about like a disagreement, but I think one of the things that is like very clear about the difference in our personalities and like our skills, like Morgan is completely covered in tattoos and they're like beautiful, intricate, like art pieces. I have tattoos, but it's only like words. Like I can't think in like visuals at all. Like I would like to get more tattoos, but like I'm just not a visual person. Like if you ask me what I would get, I could only think of like phrases and things like that. So that's just like the difference I think in like how our minds work.
That's great. I'm good you guys can Would you guys say you kind of got lucky then, because you didn't like sit down beforehand and Morgan wasn't like, I'm creative, and you're like, I'm business, all right, let's work together. You just kind of
not at all. There are times where, like, I don't want it to like sound like that's the only thing, because there are sometimes like where TJ is like, this is what we're doing. This is, I know what I want this to look like, or what this to sound like, or what this to be. And then there are some times where we like come with up, you know, we have to do like documents together and edit shit together. Like, we do wear a lot of hats, but that's just the majority of like what we do day to day. Because I think that TJ is creative, and like, I always look to him for, you know, a second opinion. Like, I don't think that I know best about everything creatively. And I always want someone to run it by. And it's like, for instance, I bought like stuff for my new house, like a new apartment. And I like had to send it to TJ and Aaron to like be like, is this good? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I like know how to do shit for like everybody else, but not me. And TJ's really, really good at being like, dude, just take this, get this, buy this. Like, this is it. Like, go on Google fucking, you know, on your camera and look at exactly what piece it is and do it. And to me, that sounds so overwhelming, but for him, it doesn't. And like, coming up with like a merch collection and reaching out to artists and working with artists and like doing all this shit, like, doesn't sound overwhelming to me. That sounds like something that I really, really, really like doing. It's a really nice balance, I think.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, it's something cool about Emo Night to me is how much you guys work directly with artists, because I feel you give a place that artists want to exist, which, you know, can't be said for all places artists go. You know, a lot of the times they go places because they have to, but I feel like Emo Night is a place they enjoy almost as much as the people that are there. When you're working with these artists, are you going directly to them, or are you mostly working through management, PR, and labels?
We always try to go directly to the artist if we can. If we have that relationship, we can't go to the artist, we try to go to the manager. Last resort is the agent. Because those are the ones who don't get it at all and only care about the money. But I feel like there's a lot of, you know, artists and managers who understand what Emo Night is and like want to be a part of it.
Yeah. Now
they're just like, give me money.
Now they do.
Yeah. What was the sell like before Emo Night? Like, I imagine as it gets bigger, in a way it kind of gets easier because you have proof of concept. But when it was starting out, what was the sell to artists? Like, how did you convince them, or was it more they reached out to you?
It was weird, because like the first one, Buddy from Senses Fail and Sean from 303 were just there, like hanging. You know, like friends of friends just like brought them because they were in the neighborhood or whatever. And then I think like Buddy's like girlfriend or something reached out the next month and was like, what if he DJed? And I was okay. We had some connections, like our former partner Babs worked at CAA, and she was the one who pitched Mark Hoppus, which was like our first big guest at our third Emo Night. And I think it just takes like having the right people who can like really understand what it is, but it is a lot easier now. I can write like a 2-sentence email, and versus like before, I'm like, Emo Night is a monthly party, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I have to like explain it and send links and like really convince people. And now it's just like, yo, like, are they around? Would they want to do this? Done. You know,
it's definitely changed over the years. Now, a lot of the artists that like I didn't think would be excited about doing it are like so excited. They think it's fucking awesome. And I think it's really cool to have a space for that, because it's like, it's a secular thing. Like, it wouldn't exist without them. And at the same time, they look at it as like, this environment and world wouldn't exist without us in 2022. So I think it complements and helps each other, which is a, you know, wild thing to think about, because growing up and listening to them, now we work together.
Yeah. What a concept. Must feel wild. I'm sure on a day to day basis, you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm just talking to this person, working with them and coordinating something. And, you know, I was wondering, one of the things about working directly with artists is you kind of get the unfiltered version of them. You're not getting it through management. You're not getting it through a label. Because of that unfiltered version of them, have you guys gotten any wild requests from artists, or has it been, you know, is it a little more, I don't know how to, unfiltered, I guess you'd say?
I mean, I think that there's like a lot of artists that we now have become very friendly with. I think sometimes it's just a surreal thing to just be texting with them. Like, you know, it's like a, you know, now we're colleagues as opposed to you know, being fans. But yeah. I mean, we're still looking fans, across at them, like,
kind of.
I don't really get like starstruck or nervous anymore. I don't know.
They've been humanized.
Yeah. It's not as scary as it used to be. I think it, at the end of the day, like, you know, everybody's trying to make a living and have a good time. And I don't know. I think we also did a pretty good job of kind of establishing like the culture of emo night. Like everybody's kind of on the same level when you go there. There's no special access. There's no VIP booths. There's no bottle service. Like everybody can come on the stage, you know, whether you're Vic Fuentes or like some random guy on the streets of Echo Park, like you can literally get up on the DJ booth with everybody. And that was, I think we established that sort of like precedent to where nobody has been like, I need this, 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 this.
No ego.
Yeah. And if they have, we just say no.
I was actually curious about that. Like, are you guys pretty good at saying no now that you kind of, you know what makes emo night fun? You know what is within your brand. And if somebody tries to push it too far in one direction, are you pretty heavy handed and, you know, drawing the line?
Yeah, very much so.
We've also hired people who are, who can like take the hit, you know?
They're your filter. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we do have like production managers now and people that if I'm like, no, they don't get 15 extra guest list spots.
Yeah.
You know, I told them that tickets were on sale. I said, there's 50 left. And they said, no, we're good with the 10. And now they're trying to do another ticket buy. Absolutely not. That was a very convoluted example, but you know,
no, that makes sense.
I have somebody else.
Who sounds oddly specific. Oh man.
And usually you want to know, it's usually like the like up and coming artists that are like very, very requesty and not like the A-list artists. A-list artists are usually really cool, man. They're just like slide in, do the thing, hang out, say hi and dip out. It's very rare where we get one of them being very, I need this, I need this. Really, really cool. Been really cool. Usually to the ones that are like, not, they don't know how to be an artist yet, but they're on their way.
They think they know and they're trying to do the thing and you're there to teach them in a way.
Yeah, the one of the worst ones, they're not even famous. It was like the girl from the Cobra Starship cover who did the lip thing. And like somebody from, apparently she's like, royalty in some country, and somebody from her team reached out and was like, she's the daughter of a gem heiress, she's on the cover of the Cobra Starship album, she wants to come to your festival, can you provide extra security? And I'm like, no. Absolutely not. We cannot provide extra security for her. She can buy a GA ticket like everybody else.
That is a wild request. I like it though. I mean, that takes some balls.
It's also been like very strange because like now, you know, people are wanting to take pictures with like TJ and I, and it was just like, that's nothing that we ever planned on. It was nothing that we've ever like, you know, so it always catches me off guard when we go there. It's like, I have to think about it like this. It's like, it is a party, but like, I am going there to work. I'm going there to like do that. And so it's very different for somebody to be like, take a picture with me. And I just, I'm in my head, I'm just like, I'm in like work mode. I'm like, I got to go here. I got to go do this. Yeah. I have to like make sure this is okay. And it's, you know, it was never meant to be that. And it just formed into that, which is really great. It means that like people like us, you know, which is cool, but it's just like, it was never, we didn't go into this being like, oh, we're going to be artists at Coachella. We're going to be like the people that are on stage at these festivals. So we had to like sort of evolve into, you know, this artist mindset without knowing that that's something we were going to do.
Yeah. It wasn't really a metric you were measuring your success in or even watching. It probably just started one day. And I've been to Emo Night. I've seen, you know, I know you guys constantly remind the crowd that they make it possible. You know, you are the first one to admit you just press a button up there. Like you are very, very aware of the situation and thankful for it and grateful, and it shows. So I know that you're not just saying that and that comes from the heart. I mean, has experiencing what it's like in a way to be an artist taught you things that maybe help you relate to the people you work with a little bit more?
Like for sure. I definitely think so. Because if like, let's say we fly all day, we have to go do some bullshit thing, then we go to the venue and it's like the things that we've asked for in the venue, like aren't set up to make like the event possible. Like it's frustrating, you know, like I understand the frustration of that. So like, yeah, it's like, it does give us a good perspective of like where people are coming from. So we look at it from a production standpoint, an artist standpoint, a fan standpoint. Like we really take a step back and look at it from every perspective.
Yeah, I think what you guys do is important, because it's no secret that if somebody else wanted to throw an emo night, you know, theoretically they could just throw it and call it. And there's people out there who copy it, but what really makes you guys unique is, well, it's you and nobody else is you. And it's evident that you enjoy this and you're passionate about it. But I was wondering, is there anything that you guys kind of keep on your radar that would take emo night from being something fun and enjoyable into something you wouldn't want to be a part of? And what do you do on kind of a daily basis to keep it, you know, in line with your goals, I guess you would say?
We have a very specific like vision for the brand and how our logos can be used, the type of language and voice. Like I still run all the socials, and we have a team of like 7 people, and I don't know if I would ever give that up, because I feel like the voice that I give the brand, I don't know if it can necessarily be replicated.
Protect TJ at all costs.
I think that, you know, we try really, really hard to always go one step beyond what the obvious thing would be to do. Even just like saying like the word emo, it's so charged, and you know, everybody has such a specific idea of what emo is or what the emo aesthetic is. And we've always tried really hard to not do that, like go the opposite direction, do exactly what you think we wouldn't do. And that's kind of what makes it really hard. It's a hard pill for me to swallow when I see things popping up that are just like super cliche. And like, you know, you look at like the flyer from when we were Young Fest, or like,
did that hurt you?
It did. It fucking hurt me, man. It really did.
I wasn't going to say anything about the fest.
Tried so hard over the past 7 years to push the genre and the aesthetic and like how it's perceived forward. And then, you know, giant corporation dumps millions of dollars into this festival, and that's the flyer for it. It's like, why do we have to be stuck there? I don't get it.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I have a really good answer for the question that you just asked, because it's something that like, I, you know, TJ and I both get frustrated, and we both get like in the weeds in different ways. And that like what I do day to day is I look at it like it's just like changing my perspective. I talked to one of my buddies who's like a, you know, is a tattoo artist, and his shit's booked out like 3 years in advance, right? And he's got day-to-day and day-to-day stuff, and that's just like, I gotta do this. And sometimes I look at it like, I gotta do this, I have to write this email, I have to be on this phone call, I have to do this thing. And he was like, dude, look at it like this. The person that booked my getting tattooed by me like 3 years ago, that's like the only thing that they've thought about for the last 3 years. And it would be unfair to me to go into this situation be thinking only about myself and like the things that I'm dealing with, and put yourself in a position of the person who bought the ticket, the person who's coming, the person who's super excited to be there. And, you know, that's your job. So it's like helps you be more excited about those things that make us a little bit frustrated and not excited about that stuff. And I thought that was a really, really strong way to look at it. So now it's like, fuck, I'm tired. I'm really like, I just want to fucking lay around. I don't want to do anything. I'm going to go in this and give it like the best I can give it for that person, like this experience. You know, like we don't even have to do a good job. We just have to do our job, you know? And it's like nobody can be awesome all of the time, but what we can do is look at it from the person that is excited to be there's perspective, and not look at it from like where we're at that day and where we're, you know, like our own ego and our own selfishness.
Well, I will use that. I mean, it sounds like, to sum it up, it's like not very me first, right? It's like, all right, well, what am I doing for everybody else? And I like that vibe. I think that rings very true. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the smartest things that I've heard, because I'm like, you know, I talk to him all the time and I'm like, man, I'm stressed, dude. I'm fucking stressed. And he was like, dude, somebody paid money to do what you're going to be doing, and do that. Like, don't look at it from like what you're doing. You can look at it, and you don't have to be grateful. Like, this is another thing. I was like, I know I should be grateful. I know I should be like, this is the coolest job ever. Like, a lot of people would kill to be in the position that like TJ and I are in. And he's like, you don't have to be grateful for it all the time. Like, work is work. Like, sometimes work is hard. Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Like, sometimes that's just the way it is, but put yourself in the perspective of somebody else who wants to be there at that moment, and it really switches shit up.
I like that. Sorry, I was taking it all in. I was just thinking. We are getting to the end here. I mean, that's a very good last. I was going to ask you guys, I had one last question, if that's okay. Can we do it in like 2 minutes?
Sure.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know, like, you guys are really successful. Like, you've done this thing for 8 years successfully. You look like you're enjoying it. It sounds like you're enjoying it. What metric do you guys use to measure success, like, internally? Like, what, when you guys talk to each other, what are you excited about professionally?
You go first.
I'm excited about the future of Emonite. I'm excited about, like, what we can do, what we're able to do, like the opportunities that we're given and how to grow and expand like the company and ourselves as people and make an impact in culture in some way. That's what really gets me excited and what like I, you know, measure success in. The fact that like if one day a week I want to order a nice dinner, I can do that now. You know, like I think that that's a really like, it's cool. I can pay my rent. I can buy food. I can pay for nicer dog food. Like that is nice to me, but like where we're, I think success is shifting the needle in culture in the way that, you know, we've always wanted to do it, whether or not people know it now. But the fact that like I think we've given a little bit of a, you know, I think we've been a little bit behind the scenes, and hopefully sooner or later like that's going to be something that people realize is like Emonite helped push music and bands, artists and communities and friends, marriages and babies and all of these things, and created this thing out of nothing. That's like what I'm excited. I'm excited to create more things out of nothing.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, like obviously like money is not the goal. Like we spend a lot of money on making these shows as awesome as they can be. I think for me, it's like, how do we keep making and doing the coolest stuff possible? I had like a really awesome moment on Monday of last week. Like we had our LA party on Friday night, which was super fun, super successful. And then, you know, that Monday we flew to New Orleans to do site visits for our vacation festival that we're planning in the fall. And we were walking down Bourbon Street, scoping out bars for the bar crawl. And I had like a hand grenade drink in my hand and like a marching band, or a, they call it a second line band, comes down the street just playing. Like, I was just like, man, my life is so fucking sick. Like, this is awesome. I want to like keep having really great experiences and like keep enjoying what we're doing. And, you know, Morgan and I used to play in bands, and people ask me all the time, they're like, why don't you play anymore? Why don't you pick up your guitar? Do you ever do that anymore? And like, I just feel so fulfilled, like creatively with what we're doing and applying so many new ideas and thoughts and aesthetics and just doing different things within this niche. It's so fun. It's so fun for us. And I think that, you know, as we keep getting more and more successful, and as Emonite has grown, we've just constantly tried to raise the bar for ourselves and literally just see how far we can take it. And I think as long as we're doing that, then we're successful.
Well, congrats. Yeah, that's amazing. And I hope your sandbox keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I hope to see this internationally and, you know, take it around the world, guys. Let's go.
Dude, we're going to Mexico with Simple Plan and Papa Roach. Like, oh, they wow. asked us to like do that. That's a crazy thing.
Mexico with bands is, that is like, you're turning it up to 11 and then some, man. Like, that is about to be wild. Congratulations.
They both haven't played there in like 8 years. It's just like,
that is about to be very, you need security.
Dude, we just want to keep doing things that nobody's done. And it's, you know, and working with people that like you wouldn't think we would normally work with. Keep pushing artists that like we find that we like. Keep working. It's like, you know, we like you. That's why we always hit you up about like shit. You know, it's like we work with, it's beautiful to be able to work with like people that we want to work with. And, yeah. You know, like TJ was saying before, it used to take a lot of explanation. And now people are like, fuck yeah, we want to do that. Let's do this collab. Let's do this art. Let's do this shit. Like, and seeing how excited everybody is about it. It's a really, you know, what a time to be alive.
Yeah.
And we would have never thought that, you know, it's like growing up in that era and that scene, it like felt like this small little thing in time that wasn't significant. And it was turns out it was like incredibly significant to a lot of people.
Man, that hits home. Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I know you guys have to get going. I just really enjoy this conversation, catching up with you guys, understanding a little bit more about what goes into everything. And I don't know, to me, it's really special that it just is so fulfilling and you doing so many things, in my opinion, for the right reason. And I don't know, I wish all the best to you guys and can't wait to see everything you do.
Thanks so much.
Here moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Well done, guys. Same to you. Same to you, man. We're fucking excited to see what you do. Like, we love watching everybody do shit.
Yeah. Thank you so much, TJ and Morgan, for your time. I appreciate you guys coming on here, and I hope to see you in real life sooner rather than later. We live in the same city, but you know, it's a big city.
You know, you see each other more when you're not in the same city.
Yeah.
which is wild.
It is weird.
Thank you, dude. Thank you, Adam. And thank you, Connor, so much for producing the shit out of this. Yeah.